Hello, podcasters. Left, right and centre back to tingle your eardrums with news and views. This week, the team's custom federal budgets, Australia's possible one-child policy and snakes on a plane. Join the Facebook group Left, Right and Centre to give your feedback. Left, Right and Centre, not just a marshmallow figure.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Student radio is continuing for another week. It's Left, Right and Centre time.
Hey, hey.
Apologies for that slightest of technical mishaps there, listener.
And I'd just like to say it's good to be back after a week off the air, and I think it's a triumphant return after the utter disaster that Left, Right and Centre was last week in my absence.
For those of you who weren't listening, but
by all reports, it was terrible.
I think we had a lot of fun in Chris's absence. Big shout out to Tristan there, who did a real good job for us last week.
Yeah, for sure. I think we really felt liberated. We were liberated from your yoke, Christopher.
Well, look, just because you cannot deal with, you know, like, I think the supreme, enormous brilliance of my presence.
Of Tim, you mean? Tim just, like, raised his hand there.
I'm sorry, yoke, what do eggs have to do with this?
It's good, Tim.
Seriously.
So,
good intro.
What are we talking about? How about this?
Who are we?
But
one of us is Chris. Still
here. I'm Chris. Yeah. In fact, it's me.
The regulars are still here. I'm Casey. I'm still here. Mateo's still here.
And hi. I'm Timothy, and I'm still here.
Yeah, so it's the left, right, and centre all stars, like the regular, the classic lineup.
Reunite at last after a few weeks.
The Waters and Gilmore lineup.
This week on the show, what have we got?
We are talking about Sandra Kank. The former Democrats, member for the Legislative Council. She's had something to say about population control, and we're going to have a chat about that.
Also talking about boat people, to not put too delicate a spin on it.
That's asylum right. Seekers.
Asylum seekers.
Oh, I thought we agreed on boat people. That's a fair label, right?
I don't think we agreed on that, Mateo. I think Tim agreed that boat people was fair, but others have questions.
We'll leave that discussion to a later date. Also, we had a little bit of fun this afternoon. One of us found a little web game that we have fun with.
But isn't a game.
No, this is serious.
This is
serious government business.
Okay, well, we'll let you in on what we're talking about a little bit later on.
In the meantime, we'd like to encourage everyone to get on the Facebook group Left, Right and Centre and email us leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. But let's start the show with some music.
Yes, and this is my selection. I think I'm going to play a song I've been dying to play. It's called Preface 2. It's by Barack Obama, and it's from his seminal 1995 debut, Dreams from My Father.
Chris, we discussed this earlier. You're not playing that.
Chris, what? Joke with the listeners.
Can I pick something else then?
As long as it's not an audiobook, yes.
Okay, as long as it's right now.
Let me pick this.
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
On Radio Adelaide 101.5
I do
FM.
Wish it was Barack Obama.
Okay.
His vocal delivery is just divine.
Don't make me throw up.
You did a really good job of covering for it, though, because you must have been really quite surprised to hear that we weren't going to play it for you.
Yeah, I was.
But then to pick out a song, and a good song as well.
To have it loaded in the CD player.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
You're a superhero.
We mentioned
a web game in the introduction. Casey, what do you want to tell us about this?
Reputable news source, as we'll all agree, news.com.au, have had a little bit of fun with the federal budget coming
Casey,
up.
Casey, look, I've got to stop you. It's not fun. It's serious.
It's serious business.
It's a fun bent on a serious issue.
No, but it's a serious bent on a serious issue.
All right, whatever.
You shouldn't be
flippant
about this.
What they're doing is they're allowing their visitors to the site news.com.au. I've posted a link to the actual page, but it's fairly easy to find on the site. So I posted a link on the Facebook page. You can also, I think it's news.com.au/instabudget. You can create your own federal budget. So it's got all of the portfolio areas. There's little slidey things, snotty knobs that's how you allocate funding to the various areas. You can raise or lower taxes depending on how much of a dictator you are. And basically, we've all made a budget.
We're just our ideal budgets. We've all sort of played around to our little dictatorial fantasies or financial fantasies. Mm. And what have we come up with, guys?
Yeah, well, I think I should start because my budget is clearly the best.
We haven't heard anyone else's yet. How do you know that?
Before you do jump into it, I'd like to encourage everyone else to go on and make their own budget and send them to us as well via email or on Facebook so we can have a look at them.
See if you can be as good as me, but I doubt it.
But also, I'd like to say just briefly that if you do send them in, we might, you know, if they're interesting, we'll analyse them on the show in future weeks, possibly. And it could be like a run-up to budget analysis.
Mm-hmm. My budget, I have managed to just over double defence spending. in our country. I've got a reasonable health budget of nearly $50 million. Massive spending on social security.
$50 billion.
So you mean, I dropped three zeros, in fact, a thousand times more than what you said.
Yeah, I did drop three zeros on my number.
Health people
huge spending on social security and welfare. Large amounts of petty cash to deal with problems as they may come up
but Tim, how could you possibly have afforded all this?
Well, I have a very reasonable taxation system. In fact, taxation is exactly the same as what we have now.
Can I also ask, what didn't you spend money on?
There was nothing I did not spend money on, Christopher. I may have cut a little bit of money down on mining and manufacturing here and there, a little bit less investment in forestry or energy.
How much did you spend on infrastructure, Tim? And communications, perhaps?
Infrastructure and communications, I will have a look. I spent approximately $4.2 billion on infrastructure. How much is the new broadband plan going to cost him? Well, I wouldn't have a new broadband plan in my budget, obviously, Christopher. No, but I've managed to do all of this while maintaining a perfectly balanced budget, so no debt for the kids.
Mateo?
And before we move on to mine, can we just ask your treasurer name for this, Timothy?
Well, of course, on this website, you have to put down a name, and I thought it would be appropriate, given how great my budget was, that I would be Treasurer Awesome.
Treasurer Awesome. Very amusing. I went for a bit of a Polish/Viking budget with mine.
How so?
Well, horns?
Boats?
Basically, I'm thinking I'm going to turn Australia into sort of a bit of a warlike state, really. Okay. I think I'm quadrupling defence spending. It's up to $100 billion.
You said Viking, right? You know that actually that raping and pillaging is illegal in Australia?
Oh, well, not in my Australia.
Fair enough. Go on.
Health spending has surprisingly almost doubled because it is important to have healthy, soldiers. House and community amenities, that spending for that has been increased. Fuel and energy, because you have to obviously fund the big war machine and also all the mines that I'm going to build. Public order and safety, I believe I've increased spending on that more or less tenfold. It's important to have a secure state.
As for weaknesses, though, Mateo, transport, communications, precisely how much have you spent on that?
See, this is interesting, because I figure I'm only going to need... I'm not going to need that many roads in my Australia, pretty much only to the military barracks that I'm going to set up.
How much? Give me a number.
Like $400 million? That's quite a lot of money, to be fair.
What about recreation and culture?
Well, I'm spending the right amount on it. I think it's $200 million, which I think should, that should be an adequate sort of print. Adequate print propaganda
campaign.
In Mateo's
defence here, defence is going to be the recreation and culture.
Mm.
So the military is culture.
Who needs fun when you've got war?
Yeah. Just before I finish, education spending I've actually left as it is, because I feel that education is important so long as you're teaching your students the right things.
Mm, absolutely.
Good point, Mateo.
Mm,
well, I've taken a slightly different take on the issue than you. I've spent $200 million on defence. I've gone the pacifist route, I think.
Nothing. You've spent nothing on defence, precisely.
$200 million.
Aren't things nice, Casey?
Aren't things... They're just dandy.
Okay, I don't even think there's a number that small for the cut, the portion of defence spending.
It's currently at $23 billion, just over $23 billion, and now I'm going down to $200 million.
So that's about 1/100th of the current spending,
give or take.
Yeah.
So basically, instead of like armor, you're just gonna have cricket pads.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Similarly, in my ideal Australia, the budget for public order and safety, police and such, $200 million. I think that's enough.
Nothing again.
Yeah. Yep. We're all very, at heart, the human person is a very peaceful person.
But I figure why risk it? Why give them the chance to be bad?
Well,
look, I mean, I think I agree with Mateo, but I also agree with lots of things that everyone here has said, and that's why I think I've come up with the best budget.
Well, I haven't finished mine. Mine's got some very good points still.
Well, what are your other good points, Casey?
Once again, I've got very little on mining, manufacturing, construction, very little on agriculture, forestry, and fishing. Why should we be supporting big business?
What's the big ticket item, Casey?
The big ticket items, there are a couple of them. Education, I've pretty much doubled the budget.
Come on, where's all the money going?
There's a lot of money in health. There's a lot of money in fuel and energy to find some renewable energy sources.
You know what I want to hear.
A lot of money in education, a lot of money in recreation and culture, kind of almost quadrupled that budget. Over doubled the transport and communications budget. Get ourselves new internet.
What about welfare?
We've got $120 billion in social security.
You've
welfare.
got a $20 billion increase in welfare spending.
I think it's a bit more of an increase than that.
Really?
Yeah, it's about a $50 billion increase.
Yep.
A year?
That's pretty good.
I've also got a $120 billion petty cash fund. So for those
to buy off the electorate.
No. For those projects that come up during the year that we can't foresee. You might be wondering how have I afforded this? How have I afforded this, guys? Well, it's really quite simple. I've reduced the tax rate for the lowest tax bracket to zero. And so you earn $34,000. You're not paying any tax. And once the next tax bracket up, it's only 35 cents in the dollar, it's a little bit more than normal. And then once you get up to $80,000, the completely reasonable tax rate, 80 cents in the dollar.
Okay.
And then above 180,000, I think this is fair. Why do all these people need so much money? 100% tax rate.
Yep. Just take all their money. Yep. Correct me if I'm wrong, your treasurer's name was Robin Hood?
No, it's Casey. I'm taking all the credit for this.
Look, to be fair, though, no, I was just going to say on Casey's quickly, if his tax rate is up at 100, those people then have no money and they're taxed at zero. So it's fine. They're getting treated
100% on all sums above 180,000. So you've got an upper limit.
I know, but once all their money's taken...
It's not taken, though. Because it's being taxed at a lower rate when it's less than 180,000.
Okay, I see. So it gets, okay, that's fair enough.
They get to keep some money.
As I was saying before, though, my budget is clearly much better than everyone's. I've incorporated the best bits of everyone's. I've spent $120 billion on defence, health, housing and community amenities, fuel and energy, mining, manufacturing and construction, public order and safety, piggy bank, which is like a slush fund, education, social security, recreation and culture, agriculture, forestry and fishing, transport and communications, general public services, and petty cash.
Well, and what about tax?
Well, that's amazing, Chris, but how did you balance your budget?
Well, the simple answer is I didn't. I have a budget deficit of $1.6 trillion.
Chris ruined the game, you see.
No, look.
We all have budget surpluses.
So, look, I've spent $120 billion on everything. How can that be bad? Look.
Chris, you've just broke the country.
I didn't break the country. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd said he was very happy with my budget. It was much better than anything he could have done, he said. Joe Hockey commented that when you look closely at it, you'd swear this was Jaunty DeLove's first attempt at a federal budget.
Wow, Joe Hockey said that same thing about my budget.
He also said a similar thing about mine, I believe.
Me too.
Look, I have to say, okay, so, look. I just can't see what the problem with my budget is. It's perfect.
Chris. Yeah, all this money being spent on all of these areas that are so important.
Look, defence, I'm covering defence. There's the Conservatives happy. I'm covering education.
Chris, in one year you've got a public debt that is, if you correct me if I'm wrong, like about 1.2 times the gross domestic product of this country.
For at least a couple of months, he's going to have a pretty great country.
And everyone will like me.
Everyone.
For a little while.
Mm. No, Chris, I'm a big fan of your budget. Can I just say, Casey, as a bit of a postscript, a bit of an addendum, you said that all of us, bar Chris, were actually in surplus. Mm. It's not actually true.
You were in deficit.
He was $80 billion, I think.
$70 billion.
Okay. Can I say, finally, the introduction to the game, it says this is it's someone else's money, spend it how you like. That was my basic approach. It's not my money, it doesn't matter.
You spent a bit more.
You spent a lot more than someone else's money, though.
I did spend someone else's money.
And then someone else's money.
And then someone else's, I suppose.
No, he didn't spend any money because he doesn't have it.
I am the... No, Tim, I'm the federal treasurer. Look, I think it's clear that my budget's the best. Everyone agrees. Well, that's really all we can... Nothing more to say about this issue.
No one agrees, and I think the listeners won't agree.
I think they will.
I want to hear what the listeners have to say about their budgets too. So yeah. I would like them to submit their budgets from the news.com.au website. It's really quite fun to do, actually.
We've had a lot of fun with it.
And there's a little link saying email your budget to a friend, and that's how you can sort of send a link to it, and people can have a look.
To left, right, and centre at live.com.au.
Because we're your friends, right?
We're your friends.
Yeah, sure.
And because we're your friends, you're going to hang around until we talk later in the show about other stuff.
Just hang around all the time. Mm. Always have it on 101.5 FM, Radio Adelaide.
What are you talking about now, guys?
We're going to talk about boat people. Now, nice controversial word there. I'll wind it back a little bit. Obviously, in the last week, especially on Thursday, there's been a bit more talk about asylum seekers, especially coming to Australia by boat. We had the incident just off Ashmore Reef, northwest of the West Australia coast. And we're going to have a little bit of a talk about that. So, any first thoughts, anybody?
Well, because the incident that triggered this was obviously the explosion of the boat just off, or just like near Christmas Island sort of thing. And it has reignited discussion of the immigration policy. What is not helpful is comments, for example, made by the Liberal Premier, WA Premier, excuse me, who is a Liberal, Colin Barnett, telling reporters that it is understood that the refugees on the boat spread petrol and that ignited causing the explosion.
Yeah, this has been one of the interesting parts of this discussion, because obviously past governments have gotten to a little bit of trouble making political hay out of initial reports on these. And Colin Barnett was essentially panned. Like, you know, lots of dark glances by especially the Labour politicians who are making commentary.
They're just generally being very, very irresponsible.
See, I'm not sure. Because, you know, I mean, obviously, you've got to be careful, especially in situations where this is a political fire keg, and you've got to be careful about inciting some level of racial hatred. But today, the defence officials have come out and said, well, there was some inflammable material. It was spread by people on the boat onto the bilge of the boat, which is a compartment at the bottom of a boat. And it was done, as far as we can tell, deliberately. Now, we don't know that's what set off the explosion.
Yeah, and that's, Tim, for me, that's exactly the problem. You're talking about, you know, the Defence Department came out and said that some of, you know, like there are elements of what he said that might be correct. But the fact is, he had no way of doing. He's not getting national security briefings, is he? Well, he's the Premier of WA. He's got no way of knowing that.
I was going to say, what's in it for him? What political capital can he make from this? Really just...
I think the word is xenophobia.
Well, he's really just running his mouth, just really irresponsibly.
And the thing about political hay, Tim, is... Hay is set alight very easily, and I hope it is in Colin Barnett's case, because I think he deserves it.
Oh, well, let's not go too far, Christopher.
Not going too far, Tim.
I don't think that. I think you're right. And I think there are conflicting issues here. I mean, firstly, the defence officials came out, you know, in the same conference where they talked about this is what's actually happened. There was actually a plea to both, you know, the public at large and politicians specifically, to try not to prejudice this investigation. And that's obviously a concern there. But also, you know, the public has a right to know these things. And details like that should be let out.
But they are. The thing is, they are. Like, you were talking about the Defence Department releasing, you know, confirming reports. You know, they're releasing information. I just don't think it's Colin Barnett's role to say these things unconfirmed with, you know, sources that aren't backed up and with no way of knowing whether what he's saying is right.
And his response to that would be, well, as it turns out, they have been, you know, reasonably accurate sources.
But there are instances in the past, continually, where it hasn't been, and it hasn't, you know, it hasn't been problematic. I don't think the fact that he might be right or parts of what he's saying are correct in this case. We still don't know that, you know, that the refugees on the boat spread petrol and that ignited the explosion. We don't know that for certain yet, do we? I mean, I just don't think it's his... I don't think he has the authority or... I just don't think it's his position to do that. It's not his place to do that.
Well, speaking, perhaps, of the heart leading the brain... On last Thursday, the Prime Minister, Mr. Rudd, launched a really extraordinary attack on people smugglers, why he was positively impassioned. I was actually interested in listening to him. He said, people smugglers are engaged in the role of people trade, and they should rot in jail because they represent the scum of the earth.
But Tony, you're a veritable quote machine today. How are you doing that?
Just my mind, Chris.
Just rattles
just
them off.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was really an extraordinary... I don't think I've ever seen Rudd do... I mean, he went on, obviously, I'm paraphrasing here, because I don't have Matteo's memory, to talk about, you know, and in my opinion, they should rot in hell. I mean, it was really extraordinary. And I thought it was a little bit odd. I mean, I have a bit of a radar when it comes to this issue, that a lot of the politicians... Like, this is obviously a serious issue, and we'll get to the issue about whether or not the loosening of immigration policy under the Labor government, whether or not that's been responsible for this. I'm just a bit cautious, because that particular tirade, he seems to be trying to deflect all of the blame onto the individual people smugglers, and I think there needs to be a broader public discussion about whether or not the current state of our immigration policy...
You raise a question. I think certainly that's a fair point. I don't disagree with any of that, but at the same time, I think, you know, the claims like, you know, some... I think the opposition immigration spokesman blamed the government for inadvertently...
Spokeswoman, right.
I'm sorry, I don't have Matteo's memory. For like, inadvertently causing the deaths. She said basically that, you know, like, you can't slash funds and take your eyes off the ball and then expect people not to lose their lives through people smuggling. I mean, that's a bit ridiculous, isn't it, to say that... You know, like, to say that if the government had spent more on immigration policy, there wouldn't have been an explosion on a ship.
Yeah, well, okay.
That's my problem. So it works both ways, you know. I, in one sense, I agree, but on the other hand, sometimes if the discussion is just blaming the government.
Absolutely, and I think on both sides what's happened here is it's gotten in the way of a genuine discussion. I mean,
certainly.
What do you guys think, dude? You can talk about three causes here. You could talk about it just being softer policy on detention and for asylum seekers and refugees coming into the country. You can talk about an increase in international, you know,
instability. Tim, yep.
And you can also talk about, well, are the instruments we have in place to deal with immigration, you know, legally, is their capacity great enough? Is it so inefficient that people are driven to coming across by boat?
Mm. Well, I think... No, you...
Because often the mainstream political debate is not a particularly fulfilling one. You have here the Liberals trying to pin this all on a softer policy by the Labor government. And you have perhaps the comment by Prime Minister Rudd, maybe, like Tim said, trying to deflect attention from his own policies instead... calling it a product of, you know, reprehensible, amoral people, individuals. It's not really advancing the debate at all. But
As a final point, like, not necessarily in the discussion, but in terms of what I'd like to say, I think the point you picked up on about whether, you know, like, the process for dealing with refugees is sufficient, Tim, is a very good one. I think the fact is, if someone wants to migrate to this country, you know, and they are a refugee or they're claiming to be a refugee, they have a right to a certain extent to be evaluated, to have their case seen and looked at. And I think if there are people who are coming over here, some of whom might be doing it because they're illegitimate, but many of whom are probably genuine refugees, most probably, yeah. I think there needs to be a mechanism so that they can be dealt with and assessed legally, because otherwise they are going to resort to this sort of thing.
And the government will always, and the Liberal government, especially when they were still in power, always went to great pains to point out, well, this is the case, and we take huge amounts of refugees from refugee centres. I think we have a couple of in Indonesia. We have, you know, things in places in the Sudan. What my point should be is that I still think the numbers. I would like to see more avenues for people to apply for legal refugee status, and. But I would also like to see that in conjunction with perhaps a slightly tougher policy on those who come to the country illegally, because not to punish them for doing something illegal, but to stamp out people smuggling itself.
Tim, I wouldn't disagree with that, but I don't think you can have one without the other. I don't agree with the former government, you know, the Howard government's policy, which was tougher, without actually allowing more avenue for having a case heard, because otherwise it's a skewed system. And I think that's pretty much the crux of the issue, in my opinion.
Mm. So a nice three-pronged attack is what we're agreeing on here. Deal with it and all issues.
Yeah.
This is Student Radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
Sounds like Bob Dylan, but it isn't. That was The Tallest Man on Earth with Where Do My Bluebirds Fly. I have been absolutely thrashing this album lately.
You love that album.
Can I just...
I do recommend this to everyone. Chris?
Same time, I actually quite enjoyed that, so I'd say I don't think it sounds like Bob Dylan at all.
Chris, you're a cheeky one. You are a bad person. Yeah, no, we'll deal with him maybe during the next song. Casey, for those of you who don't remember that you're actually a part of Left, Right,
and Center, I took a nap earlier.
Yeah, you have something for us.
I have this for you. A study has found that spam, presumably the internet variety, not the unpleasant canned ham-like substance, is responsible for the production of more than 33 billion kilowatt-hours of energy use per year, which is enough to power approximately 2.4 million homes. Research by climate consultants ICF International and antivirus provider McAfee found this equates to the emission of some 17 million tonnes of CO2 across an estimated 62 trillion spam emails sent globally each year. The study found that the average business user generates 131 kilograms of CO2 every year, of which 22% is related to spam. ICF say that spam filtering would reduce instances of unwanted spam by 75%, the equivalent to taking 2.3 million cars off the road. So we have ourselves an irreconcilable trade-off here. What do we choose between? An ailing environment or a healthier one without Nigerian benefactors and penises of above average size?
Am I the only one who thinks this is a no-brainer?
I assume you want to keep destroying the environment, Tim, as is your wont.
Look, well, I definitely want to keep the Nigerians.
And I love my large penis.
Yeah.
Sorry? Hold on, I don't understand why we can't destroy the environment and get rid of spam. Why can't we do both?
It's not a perfect world, Tim.
No, Tim, the reason you can't is because if you get rid of the spam, you haven't destroyed the environment. The environment is saved.
No, but we can find other ways. We have nuclear reactors for that kind of thing.
But that's... Look, you need to introduce a solid plan to do this. Until you can show me how, I won't believe you.
Oh.
In a display of downright misanthropy, grumpy taxi inspectors have ordered a popular Happy Cab to be stripped of all its cheery adornments, News Limited reports. Linda Jenkins, the 57-year-old who has been driving her taxi decorated with stickers and toys in the south of Melbourne for over 6 years, said that... I began with a few smiley face stickers and people liked them, so I added more and more. I have them inside and outside. Then passengers began calling it the Happy Cab and gave me little cuddly animals to put in the car. I then got Happy Cab written on the car. The Victorian Taxi Directorate said that it encourages its drivers to take an extra step and make the whole taxi journey a great experience. However, the government's job is to maintain high standards of safety, cleanliness and appearance in all cabs across Victoria, said General Manager Lisa McDonald. It is important that passengers can clearly see vital in-cab information, such as the taxi fares and the Victorian Taxi Directorate's feedback hotline number. Is this yet another case of heartless big business crushing the dreams of the little guy, or in this case, girl? Or is it the Victorian Taxi Directorate right to insist that passengers see how much their fare is?
Could it be neither? I mean, as I understand it, big business aren't involved. It's taxi drivers.
No, like a conglomerate of taxi drivers. That's not business, right?
A Victorian Taxi Directorate. Hardly a conglomerate.
Oh, well, there's more than one of them, isn't there?
I think it's important to know how much you're paying for a taxi fare. I mean, I would perhaps be prepared to pay more if it's adorned with such lovely things, little stuffed animals. Like, for example, monkeys. I heard that the blue monkey, Jazz Monkey, he actually moonlighted. He actually moonlights as
Thelonious, used to. The monkey moonlights as a Happy Cab.
The trouble I really have with this, though, is that I wonder whether the happiness is not actually inflating the prices artificially. Like, she is deliberately making people happy, and then they're willing to pay more.
It's a clever ploy.
The Sydney-born owner of a motel in the New Zealand town of Palmerston North has banned residents of rival New Zealand town in Waianae from booking a room in his establishment. The man, one Steve Basil Fawlty Donnelly, allegedly explained that of the 100 or so residents of the town of 16,000 that have stayed at his motel, he only ever liked one of them, and that it wasn't worth having 100 troublemakers stay just to meet one nice person. The Motel Association of New Zealand said the Supreme Motor Lodge was well within its rights to ban a town. Couldn't the residents just pretend to be from somewhere else?
They could. I don't know why they'd go to Palmerston North anyway.
I think they're scrupulously honest. That's not very nice to him.
He's the only one of us who's been there.
But I have a family friend of mine lives in Palmerston North, and it's a lovely place.
I have family that live in Palmerston North, or used to, but then they got out. Palmerston North was made famous Palmerston North was made famous by the Billy Connolly line. You remember that one? He said, I think, and I'm paraphrasing here, anybody out there who wants to commit suicide but just can't work up the courage, have a visit to Palmerston North. That was his indictment.
A Qantas plane was grounded after four baby stimps and pythons measuring just 6 inches in length escaped from their container in the cargo hold. At first it was thought that they had been eaten by the adult pythons on board the aircraft, but this was proved false after they were weighed on landing. The plane was fumigated, but the bodies were not found. They're not in danger, so a decision was made to fumigate. If these snakes turn up, they will be very much dead snakes, David Epstein of Qantas remarked, quite callously in my opinion. The passengers were transferred to another aircraft. Now guys, Snakes on a Plane has already been made into a wonderful film. But surely a film chronicling Qantas's recent troubles would be scary enough without any snakes?
Look, the only question I have is, where was Samuel L. Jackson in all of this? I mean, surely if there were snakes on a plane, he was there somewhere. Did the weigh-in somehow omit his presence?
Why didn't they fumigate the plane in the movie?
That is a major plot hole. I think that's ruined it for me, Tim.
I know.
No, they went about it in their own very special way in the movie. I think they decided to cure them one by one over about 90 minutes. It worked out pretty well, really.
Mm. Yeah.
A Russian man has survived after drinking 3 bottles of vodka and falling from a 5th-floor balcony not once, but twice. 22-year-old Alexei Roskov says that he jumped the second time because of his wife's nagging following the first fall. Yekaterina, Alexei's wife, had watched in horror as her drunken husband opened the kitchen window of their Moscow apartment and hurled himself out. Astonishingly, Mr. Roskov survived and managed to stagger back upstairs with barely a scratch after the 15-metre fall. But while his wife called for an ambulance and began to scold him, he jumped again. After being treated by amazed medics for cuts and bruises, Roskov said he will give up drinking. Clearly, this demonstrates that due to some evolutionary imperative, Russian men are now completely immune to the effects of alcohol and gravity. Is Roskov a superhero?
I think he's just a very good candidate to be an astronaut. Immune to gravity. Isn't that incredible?
Requisite your Eastern European story, just like every week, still kind of funny, shows the place is a bit backwards.
We don't have a fast food story this week, so we're kind of lacking. South Park fans have been left confused by a portrayal of former PM John Howard that seems to suggest he is still Australia's leader. He was depicted on the hugely popular animated show alongside other world leaders, presumably there were some current ones in there, plotting to destroy Finland. And to demonstrate that Trey Parker's and Matt Stone's subpar knowledge of world affairs extends past us down here, Russia's president is still depicted as Vladimir Putin, even though the former KGB man apparently made way for Dmitry Medvedev last year. Variety series of South Park has been back in the headlines this year with a recent episode depicting hip-hop star Kanye West as a gay fish, generating enormous internet buzz. Kanye's response? South Park murdered me last night and it's pretty funny, a good-natured West wrote on his blog. It hurts my feelings, but what can you expect from South Park? I've actually been working on my ego, though. The episode's not yet been broadcast in Australia. Guys, should we be concerned that the two men responsible for such a popular culture icon of South Park have such a poor, or at least flippant, knowledge of current affairs?
I'd be very surprised if they had actually made a genuine mistake there.
Now I ain't saying that Trey Parker and Matt Stone are gold diggers, but they ain't messing with no broke world leaders.
Mateo, that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a Kanye West lyric changed, but it doesn't...
You understood what I did, though.
Who's Kanye West?
He's awesome, Tim. We'll leave it at that. I'll introduce you to him later.
Oh, my...
Tim, you're very old now.
What? What did I miss?
Not quite as old as Chris.
Not quite as old as Chris. You're elderly, Chris.
What did I miss?
After being embarrassed by an employee's tweet on microblogging site Twitter, Telstra has released a new policy governing how staff can tweet about the company online, even in private conversations, The Australian reports. Telstra suffered the embarrassing Twitter PR event last month when employee Leslie Nassar revealed himself as the author of a popular Twitter feed called Fake Stephen Conroy. It lampooned the Federal Communications Minister, who supervises Telstra's sector. Mr. Nassar said he had been fired after the revelation, but reinstated almost immediately. According to Telstra's 3 R's of social media engagement, employees must declare they represent Telstra, take responsibility for ensuring any references to Telstra are factually correct, accurate, and don't breach confidentiality requirements, and show respect for the individuals and communities with which they interact. The so-called guardrails require Telstra employees to identify themselves as such and to not say anything deemed to be potentially damaging to the company or its commercial interests. Policy also allows employees to use services provided by Telstra, such as email and internet access, for personal use during work time within reasonable limits. If you don't get your job done because you're on Facebook all day, that's not what we want to happen, said David Quilty, Group Managing Director of Public Policy and Communications. Telstra was the first big Australian company to produce such a policy, Mr. Quilty said. It's a bit of a suck it and see, because there's no one we could use as a guide in Australia, he said. It'll be interesting to see how people in the online sites themselves react to it. Telstra has clearly decided that free speech regarding its business practices and treatment of employees is a bit of a bother, but were they right to crack down on the fake Stephen Conroy feed? And why the hell are we talking about Twitter so much lately?
I looked this Twitter thing up. It's not cool. Seriously. I went, like, you guys have been talking about it, so I looked it up on Wikipedia, right? I know what that one is. Wikipedia, that's really good.
And then
what
is Twitter? Then you look up Last FM and social networking and Bebo.
What is this social networking thing? I don't see the appeal.
Can I just say, that was extremely long, and I didn't listen to any of it, and I don't know what the story is now.
About Twitter?
Twitter.
You know that Twitter thing.
Oh, right? I know about Twitter.
They're tweeting, and Twitter's happening, and Telstra's not happy about the tweeting.
And Ashton Kutcher is the number one.
He's more popular than CNN. Casey Quinn, can I just congratulate you on the wonderful reading of that labyrinth theme.
No.
Who wrote that labyrinth theme? Rapfire News article.
A pretty eloquent chap, but maybe got a bit carried away. I don't know.
Eskimo-shaped confectionery, eaten innocently by New Zealanders for decades, has raised the ire of native Canadians who claim it's offensive in both name and shape. Seeker Parsons, a Canadian tourist travelling New Zealand, says she was appalled to see the Eskimo sweets on sale in corner shops, in fact saying that the word Eskimo itself was considered offensive in Canada, and had long since been replaced by Inuit. Not only has the name of the lolly aroused painful memories, she believes the shape is an unfair stereotype of her people, the Taranaki Daily News reported. We are much more of a people than that image. We have deep ties to the land and an ancient culture, and I think we should be recognised as that, and not just a marshmallow figure, said Parsons, aged 21. A spokesman for Cadbury Pascal, who manufactured the apparently deeply offensive miniature Inuits, said the product was never intended to offend any member of the public. So guys, to demonstrate solidarity with our Canadian brothers, I propose we boycott New Zealand, because everything associated with it represents a bad parody of Australia. You with me?
No.
I don't agree with that, but I do agree we should ban all citizens of New Zealand towns from visiting or booking into Australian hotels.
Well, thankfully you don't have that power. What's wrong with New Zealand?
Nothing's wrong with New Zealand.
Well, you're the one who's saying there's a lot wrong with a specific town in New Zealand.
Yeah, but that's the North Island. Can we ban
all people in the North Island from booking into Australian hotels?
Yeah, would you be cool with that?
No.
You said they were bad people.
I thought they're from the North Island.
Leave my family alone.
But you're a hypocrite, Tim. Can I just ask, guys, when you're thinking about the one-child policy, do you associate it with any country in particular?
China.
That's interesting. I actually think you're wrong. I think it should be associated with Australia.
Do tell.
Well, there's this organisation called Sustainable Population Australia, and they're an environmental lobby group. And they're advocating a one-child policy for Australia. Is that right, Tim?
That is. We are meeting the very famous former member for the Legislative Council, Sandra Kank, former Democrats, I think...
MLC.
Yeah, MLC, yeah. Who, giving, you know, at a an event in the last couple of days, has said that... One way of reducing the population is through a one-child policy, and the aim of the Sustainable Population Australia, who are the group that she is a part of, is that the population of Australia, which is currently 22 million, should be reduced to 7 million in order to combat climate change and other social problems.
Well, look, guys, I get the impression that in introducing this story, you're kind of suggesting she might be a bit wacky or a bit crazy or something, but actually it's quite reasonable what she's saying. Because, you know, she says, for instance, increasing the population is basically suicide. It's environmental suicide. It's utterly irresponsible. I think that's a good point. I think policy which advocates suicide is bad.
Well, Sandra Kanker doesn't, actually. She was quite notorious in the as a member for the Legislative Council. She actually, in a speech, gave instructions on how to commit suicide. She was the speech was stricken from the record. So that's, I'm not joking. That's Sandra Kank.
Tim, I remember that. That actually seems a little crazy.
Yeah. Well, we're of the opinion she's a little bit crazy.
We do have a linear scale here on left, right, and centre. I mean, zero, not at all crazy. We're pretty much like zeros or halves, or maybe like towards the one. Tim,
I'm on -4 on the crazy scale.
But that's a good place to be. Very sensible. And
Tim's,
ten.
Tim's
being
very angry at me now.
Being Fred Phelps, pastor of the Westboro Baptist Church.
And owner of an infamous website.
The URL is...
No, we can't say it on
there. Don't read that out.
But just type Fred Phelps into Google.
I think Sandra Kank gets about a 7 on that scale. Mm. And just to point it out, when her talk about... the population of Australia being reduced from 22 million to 7 million. I sat down, did some back-of-the-envelope mathematics on that with my extensive skills in the area.
It did take you quite a while.
Yeah. Well, no, it didn't. I'm brilliant at maths, Matteo. Anyway, and I tried to figure out that if Australia were to allow no children to be born and were to allow nobody to come into our country, which is not what she's advocating, how long do you reckon it would take for us to get the population down to 7 million?
Tim, I think your initial estimate was 165 years, which, given that people don't live that long...
Yeah, okay. So the first model had a couple of problems, but my second model, I think, does quite well.
So we came up with a better one. A
couple of Gaussian curves in there, a bit of integration, and I reckon it would take about 54 years for Australia to, if we were to place those restrictions.
But hold on.
And this is with no immigration at all, which is not what Sandra Kank's advocating. She's saying don't put limits on immigration.
Yeah, she says, and I'll read you the quote out. We don't have the quote, but the point she was making...
So do you remember the quote?
His memory has
failed.
Let us down.
It's pretty late,
her perspective,
guys,
is that Australia should take responsibility for cutting our own population rather than barring entry to for other nations. So,
well, actually... I don't necessarily disagree with the suggestion that our responsibility is to cut our own population rather than barring entry to other nations. But I do think the application of a one-child policy is perfectly reasonable.
But the thing is, 54 years was the estimate? I mean, that's all right for Casey and me. We'll still be alive then. You two, you'll be long gone, you two guys.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel the effects of old age now.
It's all right, Tim. Another 5 minutes and you'll be doing some eating or sleeping.
Who knows? Tim, I'm surprised you're actually not eating or sleeping already. You kept it going for a while.
That's it.
It's the end of the show.
We're not happy about it.
We're upset about it.
I'm reasonably happy about it. I don't really like you guys very much. I'm glad to be done with it.
In that case, it'll be a better part of a week before we see you again. Or maybe we'll just have Tristan on again next week, or John. That was so
look,
much,
I mean, this show, look, the show tonight with me was brilliant. I don't think, as much as you might not dislike the things I say about you, you know you can't live without me.
That's true.
Well, we managed last week all right.
Not very well.
Not very well, you would say, Chris.
I would say
a bit disparaging.
Yeah, well, look, take me or leave me. Take the good with the bad. Yeah, tough love and all that.
Tough love is important.
We've talked about a lot of interesting things tonight, I think. But again, I'd like to encourage you to do an Insta budget. They really are great fun.
And they really are Insta.
They are Insta. Well, not quite Insta. It's not like
a few minutes. Stop making up words.
We're not making up these words. News.com.au made up these words. And you've heard the word Insta before, like Insta coffee.
It's a prefix. It's not a word.
Well, then don't say we're making up words.
Made up a word. It's not
haven't we made up a prefix? And we haven't made it up.
Tim, we're striving towards the millionth word in the English language.
Well, maybe we'll talk about this soon. This is a story we haven't talked about yet, that it's the English language is approaching 1 million words, but we might come back to that another week. There's only a few hundred left, so...
We've got to make up some words quick.
Yeah.
Go, Casey, now.
Floffle mocker. That's like a moccasin type shoe thing if you are walking on concrete.
I have never been this angry.
Yep. Should we head out of here?
That was really good.
That was actually good, Casey.
I'm very impressed with
you. Something to catch you out.
Yeah.
Well, who's everyone been today?
I've been Casey. I'm extraducing myself as Casey.
I'm Timothy, and I still refuse to use made-up words.
Mateo.
Christopher.
And that's it for another week. Email us at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au and visit the blog at studentradio.wordpress.com where you can see blogs from all the other student radio shows. And don't forget to tune in next week, Tuesday at midnight. Cha-cha!